I was just your average hockey mom and signed up for the PTA. I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick. Before I became governor of the great state of Alaska, I was mayor of my hometown. And since our opponents in this presidential election seem to look down on that experience, let me explain to them what the job involves. I guess a small town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities.
That, of course, is Alaska Governor Sarah Palin speaking last night at the Republican National Convention, tapped as the running mate for John McCain. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Well, the speech certainly has people talking, and I imagine that Sarah Palin will have people talking for the rest of this presidential cycle. They're calling it a game changer. They're saying that John McCain made a brilliant pick, and there's an awful lot of conversation about this woman who would be vice president. We're going to see what Colleen Carroll Campbell thinks about not only Sarah Palin, but also about her critics here for the next 10 minutes of Issues Etc. In about 10 minutes, we'll discuss Moses with Dr. David Adams. It's Thursday, September the 4th. We want to hear from you. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Colleen Carroll Campbell's a regular guest. She's a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
I wonder, are we looking at just another Republican Barack Obama, an exceptional speaker, not hard on the eyes, but so many of the conservative critics of Barack Obama have said, yeah, he gives a fine speech, but he doesn't have much to say and not much experience.
Well, I think there's some key differences between Obama and Palin, and the most important is her executive experience. Barack Obama, simply put, has none. She has been not just mayor, but governor for nearly 2 years and one of America's most popular governors. Her approval rating's over 80% right now in Alaska. And being governor and mayor, to a lesser degree, involved being a chief executive, meeting a budget, wielding a veto pen, as she's not been afraid to do. Running something as opposed to casting votes. And we certainly know with Obama's record that while he was in the Illinois State Senate, he seemed to spend a lot of those votes voting present. Since he's entered the U.S. Senate, he spent most of the time running for president. So there really hasn't been any chief executive experience here. Palin brings that to the McCain ticket, and I think it's a crucial distinction because we are, after all, talking about the job of a chief executive, and it would be nice to have someone on the ticket who's met a budget and been an executive. And actually, of all four candidates, she's the only one who's got that particular experience.
As a former speechwriter yourself for President George W. Bush, what did you think of Governor Palin's address last night?
I thought it was a home run. I was intrigued when I heard about the selection. It was a surprise pick. I was certainly impressed with her personal story, keeping her baby despite a prenatal Down syndrome diagnosis that we know results in abortion between 75 and 90% of cases. So I thought that alone was heroic. But, you know, obviously it doesn't qualify you necessarily to be vice president. Curious to hear what she'd have to say. I just thought she knocked it out of the park. It was a great speech, but it was also delivered with timing, and the obvious joy she had in delivering it showed me that she was a political natural. And I think there was a fair amount of substance there as well, policy substance and some hard-hitting critiques of Barack Obama that, frankly, I thought were tougher, more pointed, more humorous, and more effective than any we've seen yet in this campaign.
Why have feminist leaders and even those who sympathize with the feminist movement been critical of Governor Palin?
Well, she's not the right kind of woman to run for public office, and we all know what the right kind of woman is, according to the feminist establishment. Number one qualification, you have to be pro-choice, or as I think is sometimes more accurate, pro-abortion, at least pro-abortion rights. That is the number one qualification to get funding from groups like Emily's List, which is the powerful political action committee that supports pro-choice women. It has become, in the minds of many feminists, such a massive issue that they simply can't look beyond it and be glad to see a woman assuming a role of political power and having a shot at what they say they've always wanted, which is a woman in the White House. I don't think this is a question of qualifications. And aside from all of the catty remarks about her hair, her clothing, or, you know, why does she have so many kids and all of those cultural issues, I think at the end of the day, for a lot of these feminists, she just isn't their kind of woman. And instead of really living up to all this talk about, hey, women are a diverse group, we can have different views and still respect each other, I certainly haven't seen a lot of that respect from the secular left and from radical feminists when it comes to Palin. And if she does make it into the White House, she won't have feminists to thank, and I think that will be a real death knell for the radical wing of the feminist movement.
In that sense, I don't want to draw too fine a parallel here, but in that sense, is she something like Justice Thomas?
I think in the criticism, very much so. I mean, and we've seen this of Clarence Thomas ever since he was nominated. You know, well, sure, you're a black man, but you're not thinking the way a black man's supposed to think. You know, African Americans are supposed to think X and Y. They're supposed to be very far left socially and politically. They're supposed to be proponents of affirmative action without any boundaries. And so if there's any exception to that, then you're not being the kind of African-American we think you need to be. And it's very patronizing to African-Americans, to women, and to people from other of these groups where there's this sort of mold that you're supposed to fit. And if you don't fit it, you're just attacked viciously, personally, in petty, catty ways. And I think it's a real embarrassment to the media.
Okay. Do you think that these attacks on her so far have the potential to do more damage to those delivering them than to the woman receiving them?
I actually do. I think Sarah Palin's candidacy, and more to the point, the reaction from the liberal media, has really lit a fire under many grassroots, ordinary Americans who perhaps were sitting on the fence in this election and now see a woman who's a mother of five, an accomplished executive, solidly pro-life, pro-family, sharp, articulate, and interesting, being savaged over whether her hair looks like a beehive, whether her glasses are the right way. You know, why does she wear high heels? Why isn't she in a pantsuit? You know, just silly, silly stuff, you know, and savaging her over the fact that her 17-year-old daughter got pregnant, which is obviously a mistake, obviously something, you know, she obviously doesn't stand for teenage premarital sex. But you know what? You know, she took it the way I think a woman with the position she's taken in public life would have to be consistent, and that is welcoming this grandchild into the world and supporting her daughter in her decision to choose life for her child.
I'm also wondering whether or not, not to pronounce her dead, but the ghost of Senator Hillary Clinton looms here, and that is in the critics of Palin. They view this as, you know, it should be that woman, our woman, not this woman, receiving the accolades, getting the attention, and perhaps on her way to at least second position in the White House.
That's right. I think a lot of people thought it would be Hillary. But Hillary had a woman problem. There were a lot of women in America who looked at her and said, yeah, she's a woman, but I don't agree with her. I don't like her. I think she's a little bit shrill. And frankly, I don't think being married to a president makes you qualified for the presidency. They look at a woman governor whose values tend to be more heartland values, who just naturally seems to speak their language and have their values in policy life, whose husband is a lifelong union member, who comes from, you know, a blue-collar background, and at the same time has really made something of herself that you really have to acknowledge and say, yeah, that's a little more like the kind of American woman I want to see in the White House. So I think this is a big blow to Hillary's claim to fame. And, I think probably Hillary is one of the big losers of this pick, no matter how this ticket proceeds. I think she's been eclipsed, at least for the time being, by a woman who's frankly, I think, more qualified and more likable. And for a lot of those pro-life women out there who've been waiting to see a woman on the public stage who shares their values, this is a very exciting time.
Okay, two quick final questions. Some would say, look, I thought you social conservatives were in favor of moms with kids, especially small kids, staying home, raising those kids. Why are you giving Palin a pass?
I think there are a couple of answers to that. Number one, I don't think she's running for Mom Role Model of the Year, contrary to some of the press reports. She is running for vice president. If we're willing to talk about that, I think we also need to talk about the small children of Barack Obama, whose wife also works full-time in addition to campaigning for him. Are we concerned about those kids? Do dads have a responsibility here? Is this going to be challenging for her? You bet it is. And as I understand it, her husband has left his job, taken leave, so that he can be fully available to their children. How she's going to work that out is a balance that she needs to strike. But I don't think the conservative movement and Christians as a whole are nearly as judgmental as the secular left would like to portray us. And I think there's this sense that if we could throw some red meat at Christians about her not being with the kids enough, then they're going to just fall right in line and reject her. And I think they're getting a rude awakening that maybe the truly progressive group in some ways in America, in terms of believing in women having abilities to lead and govern, might actually be more on the right than on the left.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We post a link to her columns on the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Go there tonight, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. You'll find some of the columns of Colleen Carroll Campbell. Colleen, thank you for being our guest, and happy birthday to you, Colleen.
Oh, thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about the biggest figure in the Old Testament, save perhaps Abraham. Moses himself, Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary, will be our guest. Stay tuned.
When she was an American girl, raised on promises, she couldn't help thinking that...
The sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come. Join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30. And find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of Issues Etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues Etc.